Hello there, my name is James, and you're listening to Revy Live Radio. Starting June 28th, Arch Rebel Stoic presents 64 straight nights of live music. From dreamy cowboy pop to washboard blues, and from jazz to rock and roll, we've got it all covered. You can tune into Stoic FM over the next 2 months, every Thursday at 5:30 p.m., to hear behind-the-scenes interviews and music from all the talented musicians playing Grizzly Plaza this summer. Let's get started.
Hey, we're Big Sues.
I'm Hunter.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Joel.
We're three quarters of the band Big Sues. We're going to be playing for Revy Live on Thursday, July 24th in the Plaza. Come check it out.
Thursday, July 24th.
Why don't you tell me about the weirdest show you guys have ever played?
Weirdest show
we've played? I don't know. We have any weird shows. I can tell you we have bad shows we've played.
Well, I feel like the wedding was pretty wild and...
Okay, yeah, that wasn't weird, but it was
not in a bad way.
It was like it was just super fun. Our mine and Rachel's like some of our best friends, Colin and Semley, got married a couple weeks ago. We played the wedding in their backyard, and it was just an absolute rager. It was so silly. We played under the tent for our best friends. The crowd was excited. We had a good time.
It was very silly. Yeah, there was just so much love in the air, and people were just vibing, and even, I loved seeing the parents, like, each set of parents just get weird on the dance floor, and I'm just drumming, just having the time of my life, and I just see them, like, the crowd open up, and they're just throwing down. And, Hunt was definitely feeling good himself, for sure, I do remember that.
There was this one show that we played when Hunter and I were kind of still doing shows as a duo, which we don't really do anymore, but we played a show at the Railway Museum for, I think it was the Sunday of Luna, and it was just me and Hunter playing music in the Railway Museum with people like kind of half watching, but also like walking around the Railway Museum.
That's a
and
good
then
one.
To top it off, it was even weirder because I work for the Grizzlies and they were volunteering at the Railway Museum that day for this specific event. So it was.
Have they see you, seen you sing before?
Definitely not. And it was extra weird.
Yeah,
extra weird.
When we got there, Rachel's like, dang it, I haven't told them that I sing in a band yet. They're all here.
What did you play?
So many things. It was weird for me, for sure.
Did you guys play any songs about trains, though?
I think we might have. Did we play Folsom Prison Blues?
No, definitely not. I don't even know that song.
No?
Really? Johnny Cash?
Maybe I do.
You might
probably if I heard it. I don't know names of songs. I just know what they sound like.
Hmm. When did you guys take it from Hunter and Rachel to Big Sue's?
Okay, that happened last year in the spring. Rachel and I had started playing together. I was going to open mic quite a bit at the Drop when Andrew was still running it, and Andrew asked if I would play a set for Tadpole, and I said yes if Rachel wants to do it. So we wrangled a band together. We got Bambi in on the bass, and we had Phil on drums, and we put it all together like two weeks before Tadpole, and put together a set.
Well,
and we had a party, Rachel, I think it was for your birthday. We're birthday party at your house, and we had a little thing, and we were trying to figure out a band name, and we came up with Big Sue's, and we'd message Andrew, said, hey, we've got a band name. He's like, damn it, I just published the poster. You guys are going to be on the posters, Hunter and Rachel.
That's why I thought you were dating when I first met you.
Everyone on the planet thought Hunter and I were dating when we first started this band, and it was the furthest thing from the truth.
So good.
We also found out later that Andrew knew that it would freak us out in terms of how somewhat big that first gig would be, and he
didn't tell you the scale of what
he didn't
going.
Exactly tell us the scale of what it would be, but he did tell me later on that he did it because he thought it would put us in a pressure cooker for growth.
Nice.
And it well did done. Because now we are a full band.
Hell yeah.
Since then.
Wise man.
But yeah, so we kind of like put together a set of music, and then we had applied to do Revy Live last summer, and went from playing like the two of us at open mic to having a band for a set. And then Bambino plays in every band in town, but he also leaves every summer. So we had signed up for Revy Live, but it was twice as much music as we had to play for the Tadpole show. And we were without a bass player. I'm like, oh, we'll figure out one of them. We'll find a bass player. And I'd taken over hosting open mic at the Drop and get in there one night, and I was borrowing somebody's bass or something. Like, the plan was I was just going to play bass for jam night when other people were playing, and all of a sudden I, like, Phil and I'd play like one song, and this guy walks into the room and he comes up and he's like, "Hey, can I play bass with you guys?" We're like, "Sure, this is awesome." Introduces himself. He's Levi. He plays all night. At the end of the night, I was like, "Hey, are you interested in playing in our band? We've got a show in like less than a month. I mean, you might need to learn like 30 songs. He's like, "Well, I don't really play bass, but I'll do it. I just don't want to buy a bass." He's like, "I'll buy the bass if you play in our band." And so Levi joined the band as the bass player, and it was super awesome.
Now again, Levi's still our bass player, and he still plays on the bass that Hunter bought him as a wish to be in our band for Revy Live last summer.
Yeah.
We made it happen.
It's kind of like the beauty of just being in the scene and the live music night or jam night. It's just you get to cherry pick all the best bandmates and just be like, "Hey, I need you for a project. Don't worry about it. Just say yes. I'll cover everything else." So
talking about being in every band in town, I think Joel has the crown now.
He must.
Now that Bambi's gone.
He's what we... Well, I don't know if I can say this on here.
Bleep it out.
That's what we call a band.
Wow. Well, you know, if you got a gift, you got to share.
How are you?
Take two.
The next year, I don't really know what it has in store. Like, we're hoping to play some tunes. We're going to do a show, the first show out of town with ARF in Fernie this September. Hell yeah. So that's going to be awesome.
August.
September 12th.
12th.
Yeah, and I think just keep playing shows. It would be fun to do some tours around some of the ski towns, wherever, over the winter, and just keep working at it. I think one of the goals we have is to try and go from playing mostly sets of covers to at least half the songs being original or more, and working into that.
We've also talked about just like continuing to write music and trying to, you know, get our sound dialed as a band. I think like we kind of had a bit of a crossroads in the last couple of months here where we kind of had to ask ourselves like, what is our goal as a group? And we found ourselves in super stressful rehearsals that didn't quite feel aligned with what we were wanting to do. And I think like we kind of had to take a bit of a pivot and decide like, what do we want to work on as a group? So I think like, you know, spending more time together, getting creative and writing does seem to be something that we're all very keen to do. And then if that kind of turns into playing more shows with originals, I think that's kind of the ultimate goal. But for the moment, like maybe more focus on writing. And then if we can get some of those things recorded, that would be a very cool thing to show for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the next year. Just try to get out of Revy, get Big Sue's playing in different venues. And then after that, big priority will, record and get our songs out there and have something to show for it and send people and, hopefully hop on some tours with some bands.
I think another obvious one is that one of our funnest shows we did this winter was the Cowgirl Disco Party. So we need to do the second annual Cowgirl Disco because that was awesome.
100%.
Not sure where yet, but we're going to do second annual.
I won't
Big priority.
This time.
All right, Alad, I have one more question. Can each of you tell me your favorite piece of musical gear that you own? Whether that's an instrument.
I know Rachel's. Rachel really loves her microphone stand. Shout out
so
to Hercules.
Much. So much.
No, it was ridiculous. Every venue we would be at, and you know when you're playing keys, the mic stand adjustability is actually really important. And when you're playing keys, it sometimes has to be adjusted on the fly. And all of these venues we were playing, all the microphone stands were just absolute crap. And so finally, I think after one of our gigs, we got paid a little bit of money, and I spent some good money on a good microphone stand. And ever since then, I have not looked
not once
back,
has
and
it not
I'm,
come up.
I'm pretty vocal about my love for it as well.
She carries it everywhere.
I don't.
It's currently in
and
a
then,
car
and then Hunter
right
brought
now.
The same one, so you can't even be mad. Hunter, what's your favorite piece of gear?
That's a good question. I finally bought a pedal board. That's made my life a lot easier. That's more of a practical one. It's like asking your favorite fruit and saying banana just because it fills you up so well. But
Hunter got really excited recently about a new slider tool he bought.
Oh yeah, I just got this new slide. It hasn't actually shown up yet, but it's a ring. I love playing slide guitar, but it's a pain in the butt having it on your finger all the time. Yeah. So I found this one. I can't even remember what it's called, but it's like a ring and you can flip it around and play slide. And so maybe that will become my new favorite piece of gear, but it said it shipped yesterday.
For me,
double kick.
Definitely not the double kick. But I feel like your second guess would probably be correct. I feel like
the second floor tom.
The second floor tom. Yeah. I love that thing so much. It just really gets the tones I need and feels good doing really full body rolls and, you know, fits so well into trucks and spaces that while we're touring.
I also love Joel often for our shows plays with these two little like hand bongos that he gets in there. That's a fun little addition. That's my favorite piece of Joel's gear that Joel uses.
Big bongo guy. But yeah, that'd be it for me.
My name is Mallory Chipman. I'm playing Revy Live on Friday, July 25th, and I'm coming at you from Edmonton, Alberta. This is my second time playing Revy Live, and I'm absolutely stoked to be there again. We are touring a new record called Songs to a Wild God. It's a folk rock kind of singer-songwriter album, and we're going to be playing songs from that and our upcoming release, so I'd love to see you there. Okay. The weirdest show I've ever played. Well, I think that it's actually an easy question for me to answer. It was a couple of years ago at an elk ranch. It was a show that wasn't supposed to be at an elk ranch. It was supposed to be at a coffee shop, but the coffee shop had been closed down unexpectedly that very day. And so we get a message from the bookers going, "Hey, we've moved locations. The show's actually going to be at an elk ranch outside of town," which is a very different vibe from a coffee shop. And we arrived there, and the person who owned the elk ranch was sleeping. So we never actually met this person who we were like performing in their home. Which was kind of hilarious. And I multiple times throughout the night wondered, do they actually, sorry.
It's okay.
I wondered, do they actually know that we're here right now? And the other funny part about it was that only because it was such a last minute schedule change, only some of the folks that had bought tickets realized it was at this new location. So it was a really kind of like slow burn audience arrival kind of trickling in through the night, which was, halfway through the show, half the people are showing up. And we had been told originally with the place we were supposed to play that we'd be staying the night in their accommodations. But since it had moved locations, we wound up two of us cramming into a tiny love seat and sleeping under like, upwards of 15 taxidermized animals on the ceiling. Just like the two of our legs tangled up in this love seat, which is not big enough for one adult, let alone two. I think we probably slept about 2 hours that night, if we were lucky, and we very quietly crept out the next morning because, again, we didn't even know if the guy knew we were there. So it was definitely the weirdest show I've ever played, but I remember it fondly, and it's made for a good story. And what can I say? Like, some of the weirdest gigs are the most memorable. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have if you were to play a second ranch, do you have an animal of choice that you would choose?
Oh my gosh, probably not because I'm a vegan and I'm not really into ranching, but I would play on a wheat farm, no problem.
There you go. I love it. Yeah, just wondering if you have a favorite thing to do on a day off on your tour.
I have really loved getting tattooed on my days off because usually it allows me to kind of like make a little memory immortalized from wherever I am at the moment, which has been really fun. I've done that a couple times while I've been abroad and on the road. And sometimes I'll get something about the place we are or something that memorializes sort of like the tour we're on. So if it's for a certain album, getting something related to that record. And also just, like eating and drinking my way through a place is usually how I like to do it. I'm like, let's scope out like all the breweries and the third wave coffee places and get some good like local grub. And honestly, just trying to take it easy for the most part. Like, I'm usually not out doing big extravagant excursions or tourist things, even, when we're far away places. So.
To the touch, it was old. I could tell that much when I caught my reflection in the glimmer of Russian marble. stories. Myths, superstitions, I laugh. Never liked tradition, but it's here in translation that I start to believe in magic. Oh, where my breadcrumbs, I cannot find them. Where are your footsteps to lead me back, lead me back? Grasping at echoes of hand-me-down memories. Oh, sing me to sleep and keep the beat in the ethic time. Oh, in the ethic time. Who would have guessed that this mortar and pestle would fit to my head like it was here waiting?
What's your songwriting process like?
My songwriting process sort of varies depending on whether or not I am on like a touring cycle or taking a bit of a break. I would say when I'm on the road a lot, I am probably a little bit less intentional about sitting down and making time to write songs. But there is a lot of downtime when you are on the road, like in terms of the actual drive. And there are a lot of experiences that warrant talking about or sharing about that might make their way into a song. Because you are in a new place every night, meeting new people and hearing new stories. And it can really make for some interesting material. Not to say that that's why we do it, but it's just inevitable that wouldn't have these experiences that are inspiring in some way. So I think a lot of the songwriting that's more just like the ideas that emerge and the seeds that get planted and then marinated, that happens when I'm on the road. When I'm at home during sort of like a writing season or recording, and I'm, in the comfort of my own home and I'm in my office and I have my instruments and I have more time, I'm a lot more intentional about like songwriting as a practice. And I have a couple hours today. I'm going to make sure I sit down and try to write something, even if it's something that never sees the light of day, because songwriting is a practice like anything else and it's a muscle you want to keep in shape. So that's when I usually actually complete the ideas that might start to sprout during tour. My most treasured musical possession, that's a tough thing to pin down because there are a couple that stand out to me. One is a signature model tenor guitar that was built in my name and a limited run was sold by a premier tenor guitar builder out of Vernon, BC, named Craven Tenors, and it's an absolutely beautiful hand-carved archtop guitar called the Mallory Chipman Anamoya. And Anamoya means nostalgia for a place you've never known, which is very kind of cool and poetic. So that has, meant a lot to me to have that created. And when they approached me about that, I was really quite moved. And to see that guitar in other people's hands is pretty special. But I would also say my piano, I have two at home. I have an upright and a grand, and both of them are very special. My upright is the piano I grew up playing as a kid that belonged to my great grandfather. But probably most special of all is my grand because it was my grandpa's. And he was a professional musician. He was a piano player. He was the first person I saw do like the full-time freelance artist thing. And it seemed possible, watching him do that for his career. And he passed away 7 years ago now. And when he passed, he had shared with me that he wanted me to have his piano, and it meant a lot to me. So it's the piano I play every day when I'm home, and it's the piano that I write a ton of songs on, and I definitely feel connected to his memory when I'm working on that piano for sure.
Hey, this is Miles from home. We're playing Revy Live Saturday, July 26th at 6:30 p.m. Be there or be square.
Things are the worst. Oh, you're so far behind, you think you're coming in first. Isn't it what we all want? Life in the sun, no more work, only fun. And I've been trying for so many years. I fought back so many tears, and this whole time afloat. Isn't it what we all want? Life in the sun, no more work, only fun. And I've been trying for so many years. I've fallen back so many tears. And this whole time
Ooh, that's a tough one. Weirdest gig ever would probably be, well, I used to play in church, so I got my I st my start playing guitar in church. So I'd say that's definitely weird compared to what we're doing now, singing songs about Jesus. And that's really where I got to be comfortable on stage because basically everyone in my small town in Manitoba would come out to church every Sunday. So I'm sure there's probably some weirder gig somewhere, but for some reason, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, fair enough. How'd you find your way out to Vancouver from Manitoba?
So I went to Montreal for university after high school. After a couple of years, I took a couple of years off and then I went to Montreal. I went to McGill, did engineering there. And then I actually got a job with a fusion energy company in Vancouver 9 years ago. And that's why I moved out to Vancouver. So this project, Miles From Home, is relatively new. So I've been in Vancouver for 9 years. Like I said, I was the first few years I took off music. I was focused on snowboarding and mountain biking and surfing and living the West Coast dream. And then I got back into music. I was in a band called Narfunkel for a few years. And then the pandemic hit. We recorded a record. And then as we came out of that, I transitioned into this project. So I've actually been playing Miles From Home on and off pretty much my whole adult life. But this latest iteration is we've been playing for about 3 years now here in Vancouver.
Do you start songs on like an acoustic guitar? Are you a lyric first kind of person? What's your process like?
So for every song, it's a little bit different. Typically, though, it is guitar, melody, and sort of riffs that start. But then I'll also kind of have a collection of lyric ideas and concepts for songs. So the way that I explain it often is there's I kind of have two clouds in my head. Was one cloud of these riffs that whenever I pick up guitar, I'll play them and I'll try different things and I'll start to maybe put a few of them together. And then there's this cloud of ideas about, hey, I want to sing this song about this concept or this moment or this phrase that I heard someone say. I want to be the basis of a song. And then all of a sudden, they'll kind of click and they'll be like, oh, this music should be with this concept. And then typically lyrics come fairly quickly. If it's doesn't come quickly, I usually leave it. For me, that's a pretty strong indication that I don't have something to say about the thing I thought I had something to say about. And I also have experimented lately with more complicated vocal melodies. So I used to kind of bang out the acoustic guitar and sing along, but now I've taken a slightly different approach where I'll record the guitar and then write the vocal melody to it, because I find that I can write more interesting and sometimes more complicated. Don't always have to be complicated to be interesting, but more involved vocal melody lines when I'm not also playing the guitar. So that's been a new thing that I've tried lately, which has been really helpful. And then, of course, you have to teach yourself how to play the guitar and sing the song at the same time, which at times has been challenging when they're written differently or when they're written independently. But that's I found has been a great process.
All right, we're both. Still watch out, video.
Christmas. You know, every time I listen to her, I'll think of us. Jack Frost, he's nipping at your nose. Clitoris and fingers, elbows and toes. Yeah. I remember the day we chose to go, but that's all right, we're both. Still watch our video. I said, yeah, I remember the day you chose to go, but that's all right, we're both. Still watch our video. It's all right with both. Still watch our video. I say, yeah, I remember the day you chose to go. It's all right with both. Still watch our video. I say, yeah, I remember the day you chose to go. But it's all right.
Another question that I've been asking everyone, it's kind of what I'm ending every interview with, and I'm just wondering what your most treasured musical possession is.
My very first acoustic guitar I ever bought, no doubt, immediately. If I was going to grab one thing from my apartment in a fire, it would be Nicole, is what she's called. That's what my parents had to name me if I had been a girl. And I bought her in 2004. The Long McQuaid in Winnipeg on June 12th, 2004, with money that I made on the farm. And it has been my acoustic guitar, my go-to acoustic guitar ever since. Been on canoe trips, been on camping trips, almost caught on fire, almost underwater, busked from Manhattan to Milan. A lot of trips, she's flown a lot. She's flown to Europe and back. Probably at least 6 or 7 times. That's definitely my most prized possession. And honestly, people will play that guitar and they're always really like, wow, this guitar sounds really good. And it's because it's never been underneath the bed. It's never been stashed away. It has been played so much. And I really think that it its spirit shows that.
I'm Jared.
I'm Darcy.
We're Shoestring Necktie. Come check us out in the Grizzly Plaza July 29th.
3, 4. Staying here with you.
Is it really any wonder the love that a stranger might receive? I cast your spell and I went under, and I find it so difficult to leave. I can hear that whistle blowing, see that station master too. If there's a poor boy on the street, then let him take my seat, 'cause tonight I'm staying here. Ticket out the window, throw my suitcase out there too. Poor boy on the street, then let him take my seat, 'cause tonight I'm staying here with you.
What's the weirdest gig you guys have played in Revelstoke, whether that's with Shoestring or by yourself?
That's a tough one. I'm drawing a blank here.
I'd say for me, it was playing when I played before Shoestring, it was a band called the Grooveneers, and we did the Wine Festival. And it got a little wild. People had too much wine. We were put in the corner of the room, which is the day lodge, where they had the wine festival, and we're like an 8-piece band, we're crammed. I had a flute in my face the whole show. People just got rowdy on wine, they're rushing the stage. Friends of ours had to drive people away. Yeah, it was a wild, wild time.
Pretty rowdy, yeah.
Yeah, I got a little nuts there.
Okay, I got one here.
All right, let's hear it.
Probably one of the weirdest, also one of like the most satisfying and fulfilling was, when they started doing the guerrilla gigs during COVID, and I think we were one of the first ones to go, and we just did it as a duo in the forest down at the Forestry Museum. We had to lug all of our gear in. It was just Nick and I. We did a duo down there. Probably the weirdest, just because we were in the middle of a forest and hadn't really seen people without masks on for, you know, 6 or 8 months, and just people hadn't seen live music, so they were stoked. Everybody was super excited to be there. It was super quiet, and yeah, just playing in the middle of the forest to
that's a perfect segue into maybe a quick history of the band. Yeah, if you guys want to give me a rundown of how long you've been playing. I know you mentioned you played in other acts in Revelstoke as well, and I know Nick's over in Calgary now, and I don't know how often he plays with you, but yeah, give us a rundown on what's been going on in your world.
Yeah, the band has kind of evolved over the last 9 years that I've been here. First started out with Jamie Wenzel on drums and Bassy Dave Marfleet playing bass. So after I moved to town, did some solo gigs, kind of got paired up with those guys through Steve Smith. And the first gig we played was actually a Revy Live gig in the Plaza as a trio. So that was our first gig and my first introduction to playing with those guys. And it was awesome. not long after that, Dave kind of got busy with other stuff in the summers and was kind of in and out. So we played together a little bit. Jamie and I kept doing a lot of duo gigs, just acoustic guitar and drums. We did that for a couple years until we linked up with Nick. And he was like, oh, I play the pedal steel. I've never played with anybody. Like, do you want to jam? So then Nick kind of jumps in and we start jamming with him, do a lot of trio gigs. And then kind of from there, we're like, okay, let's put together a five piece and get Darcy and Dave in. And basically when we planned for that, then COVID hit and like all the gigs we had planned for that summer were canceled. But we were able to jam together a couple times. And then from there, it just kind of kept evolving. And, you know, then unfortunately Dave moved away. And so then we brought Johnny on bass. Then Nick moved away last year. So we brought Sadie Baker on keys and vocals. So it's just been kind of ever evolving. But, you know, Jamie has been the one constant in the band, definitely my favorite drummer to play with, so I'm happy that he's stuck around.
Actually, I think I met you through Bruce Thomas. He did a project called Revy Made, and it was Dave, myself, and another drummer, Garrett, I believe, were hired to do this Revy Made compilation disc, and it was singer-songwriters from town, and we were like the session musicians for it. And so I met you in the basement of Bruce's place where he was doing these recordings.
Yeah.
And I think I met Nick at open mic at the Drop when I was playing with the Maritime Kitchen Party guys doing the open mic stuff. And Nick would always ask me to stay on stage with him and he would play. I guess, I've known Jamie and Dave for a long time. And yeah. I think that's how that happened, meeting you through that and then starting to play together more and get the phone call to join these guys to get this act going. And yeah.
Has the country genre kind of always been something both of you have played a lot of, or did you kind of adapt to it when you got asked to join the group?
Not at all for me. I've really appreciated country music through meeting these guys and playing it. I come from more of a rock and jazz and blues background. I was playing in jazz bands and funk bands before, but never country. And I've been having a lot of fun doing this and getting it.
I've definitely always been drawn a little more towards the country. Like, I don't think this band started out as like a country band, and I'm still not sure if we're probably considered like Revelstoke's country band, but I don't know if we're like truly a you know, super deep country band. A lot of bands that I've played in, I've always played acoustic, and I think that kind of lends itself to a lot of country. So it just kind of evolved. I mean, I like wearing cowboy boots and I like wearing bolo ties, so
just, and denim, lots of denim.
Yeah, and I like wearing denim, so it just kind of fits the role.
as a guitar player, it's got to be pretty fun playing country. There's some pretty sweet licks.
It's a lot of fun. You know, I have a Telecaster that I've really enjoyed playing and still enjoy playing. I've even bought myself a cowboy hat. So it's a lot of fun to play those twangy, bendy licks all the time. I don't know. It gets kind of under your skin. It gets addictive after a while. So
I think a lot of the, we play a lot of older songs and like a lot of Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen and stuff like that. And I think when those songs were coming out, they definitely would not have been considered country at all. But now, just over time, I think oldies are kind of falling into that realm, and I think that's kind of where we fall into it too.
Every time we play Dust on the Bottle, people go crazy.
Yeah,
like I can't get over how the reactions of a lot of people when we start playing some of those signature tunes.
Do you guys have a most treasured musical possession of yours?
Yep, it's in the case right here beside me. It's my Telecaster that I've done some work on over the years. The Telecaster is like the quintessential sort of country guitar, of course. The electric guitar that kind of started it all. But I've had mine for a while, and I've done some mods to it, wiring mods and pickup mods, and threw a Bigsby on it, which is like the first gen whammy bar, for those that don't know. It's my baby. I love it, and not a day goes by where I don't play it or think about it.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I've got a few guitars that I'd be trying to grab if if my house was on fire, but yeah, the Telecaster, like I'd say like my J45, probably the first one that I grabbed, just because it, you know, I played a lot of gigs and saved up some money and pulled the trigger, and just it's the most expensive guitar I own, so I think that's that would also be one of the reasons to grab it. I've got an old Norman acoustic that I bought like when I was playing gigs in Ottawa in university, and it's just been sitting in the case for like the last couple of years, and I realized Darcy didn't really have an acoustic guitar, so I've lent it to him, but I've probably played about 600 gigs with that guitar. And Darcy's and I don't really get to play, yeah, jamming on it, and so I'll never get rid of that one, but it can just kind of float around.
She really loves that guitar. It is nice to play for sure.
Oh, Hank Williams, he came from Montgomery with a heart full of broken country songs. In Nashville, Tennessee, didn't really understand it, 'cause it did things different the way they were always done. But he finally made it to the Grand Ole Opry. He made it stand still, and he ended up on alcohol and pills. Singing, Lord, in a brand new way of dancing. Weaving from the waist up, Lord, it gave the world a thrill. But he ended up on alcohol and pills. And alcohol and pills, and it's a crying shame. Think they might have been happy with Parsons, Lord, and there's Jimi Hendrix. The story just goes on and on, you know it always will. They all ended up on alcohol and pills. And alcohol and pills, and it's a crying shame. You think they might be happy with one day. Sometimes it's a heart attack, sometimes just don't say. Well, they took old poor Hank Williams out of Cadillac Coupe to Ville, 'cause he ended up on alcohol and pills. And alcohol and pills, and it's a crying great shame. You'd think they might have been happy with glory and fame. But fame doesn't take away the pain, it just pays the bills, and you wind up on alcohol and pills.
That's all the time we have for this week. On July 24th, we have Big Sue's. On July 25th, we have Mallory Chipman. On July 26th, we have Miles From Home. July 27th, we have Darren Greatley. July 28th, we have the Gabriel Viscano Trio. July 29th, we have Shoestring Necktie. And July 30th, we have the Porch Hounds. We'll see you guys out there.